The theme for the afternoon talk is the benefits and the limits of happiness. Could you give me some water, please? In the varieties of experiences, experiences, there are obviously those experiences which we genuinely appreciate. They do touch upon us, and in that there is an influence, and that influence not only extends itself through the inner life of heart and mind, but also and equally due to the intimacy, extends itself into the physical life. And there are times in our life, both here and elsewhere, where the circumstances and events of life touch upon us, and we feel in that touch an authentic and genuine response. And in that response, we might describe that as happiness. And we see with our experiences of the senses that the eyes, ears, nose, tongue and touch can be rather open windows, avenues to the inner life. And through any of the senses, this touch can take place, and that touch generates a response. And the response, generally speaking, is not planned, it's not thought out, there was no prior preparation towards, but nevertheless, we can say, perhaps more than what we realize, that there was a sensitivity, a receptivity, and in the being of the sensitivity, eyes and ears, nose, tongue and touch are open. Something from the world passes through us. And in the contact with the inner life, it sparks something. It evokes. It wakes something. And these moments of life, which bring about the joy and happiness, is one of the ultimate confirmations of our capacity, in a way, to see the infinite in the finite. I'll try to explain here. Everyday life, quite often, both here and elsewhere, we're just doing what we do. Here we engage in meditation, we engage in mindfulness practices, we look at ourselves, we're conscious of the immediate environment which is around us, and we're kind of engaged in a process. All of that can contribute, and is intended to, towards some experiences of calmness, relaxation, and the overall general sense of well-being. And in a kind of mad societies that we live in, frequently bordering, frankly, on the neurotic, that calmness and inner sanity, clarity and peacefulness, both within ourselves and elsewhere, is something which is surely to be welcomed. Nevertheless, coming to the point, there are moments. The moments may be relatively short-lived, but they are profoundly important because of the unplanned, unexpected, unthought-out, unworked-for nature of them. All that could be said is the receptivity, and then through the eyes, or the ears, or the nose, or the tongue, or the touch, or through memory, something moves within, and the inner life responds, or it kind of wakes to it, and emerging out of that is this happiness that I'm speaking to you about. These periods and moments of happiness make life worth living. It's one of the authentic expressions which validates the human experience, that life is worthwhile because of the impact and the touch of happiness which it brings out, and all the benefits to heart, mind, body and others. And the Buddha, one of those, I've never quite seen in the environment in 20 years of coming, strange kind of day like today. It's like the day can't make up its mind whether it, what it wants to be. And I was just doing my normal Dobie Waller routine, which is washing a few clothes, including a white shirt, while you were all here in Nirvana. And well, hanging out there, I looked at this shirt, and I thought, it looks kind of pale, sickly yellow. Anyway, I'll still be wearing it. It's these moments which touch us. It's these moments which express something. And the and as I said a moment or two ago, in that meeting of whatever it is that's touched us through the senses or maybe a memory, which is bring about joy, it is a kind of confirmation of the infinite, and I mean it, of the infinite in the finite. In other words, sometimes it could be a meeting with the other, a meeting with oneself, small event, and the contact, the meeting, the engagement there with the form or with the silence or whatever, bringing out this happiness, it is telling us of something greater than itself. Understand? The day goes by, we just see, we hear, we smell, we taste, we touch, we get on with our life. And then there's the interruption. It's the interruption of the getting on with our life. There is an immediate impact upon us. It brings out this happiness. And the happiness speaks of something bigger, here's the finite aspect, infinite, something bigger than itself. And that may bring out a greater sense of awe and wonder and acknowledgement of the extraordinariness of life. And consciousness has this capacity. These moments and these events can be life-turning. And I want to, in one way or the other, and I want to give a story, but in this case a personal story with regard to this. The other evening, before I go into it, with the meeting of the staff on the previous retreat, we sat out over in the back there in a circle on the grass, and we made this short agreement, this is probably 3 or 4 nights ago now, that we would share a story about ourselves that we possibly hadn't shared before or we had forgotten. So we went round, and it was precious and very, very sweet to listen to. So after this, and during a meditation, I recalled, it's fairly current as well, to some degree, I recalled a story. And And I've also, forgive me, but I have a poem on it as well. It's a romantic story. We'll see how far I dare go. Anyway, it seems lifetimes ago, which is in the 1980s, which some of you won't quite remember even, but anyway, it is in the 1980s. There, I was in India, and outside a Tibetan temple, I met and entered into a conversation with one of those beautiful goddesses who walk around on the earth, and where the eyeballs raise so far that the balls pop out and you have to put them back in. You know the type of situation. And out of this meeting that took place, a friendship developed. Some communications helped me. Forgive me if I'm blubbering around here. I'm English after all, if you know. And a year or two later, this good lady, who had a small daughter at this time, drove from a country in southern Europe, right up through Germany, Denmark, Sweden, Norway, in the month of June, right to the edge of the Arctic Circle, in order to see this experience of the Arctic in the midsummer, when it's like 22 hours of daylight, and this extraordinary aurora of light that goes on. And she drove up, in this tiny little Fiat. I don't know if you remember these tiny little cars. You know, if you lean on it, it fell over. You know, it was one of those there. And bless her, while up there, my name came to her there, and she rang me up from the edge of the Arctic Circle and said, "Christopher, can I drive down and..." This is the goddess of the earth. Yeah, this. "Drive down and pay you a visit." I mean, of course, hallelujah. Yeah, absolutely. "I'll leave the front door open till you arrive." So she drove down and came to stay. Come to the point. And I still have, again, a lovely, good contact with her. This is all coming back to the moment of life, these moments of life, and perhaps we've already got these stories. It'll probably take 45 minutes, and I can say, may all beings be happy and go and do something else. But anyway, we'll see. So, she came down to stay, and then in the early 1990s, anyway, I saw her last year, see her again, and she said to me, "Oh, Christopher, do you remember the time when I said to you, would you like me to come and live with you?" She said, "You probably won't remember this because it's a long, long time ago." And I said to her, it was in April 1992, we were standing in the kitchen together, it was after breakfast, you were about 1 meter from me, you looked in my eyes and you said, "Would you like me to come and live with you?" I remembered. You don't forget those moments. And she said, "Do you remember what happened?" And I said, "Yes." I said nothing. I smiled. And that was it. And then, because I thought she was just, you know, it's a nice thing to say after breakfast, you know. And she said to me, "I meant it, you know." And I said, "Shit." Oh no. And how one moment, I just use it as an example in life, one tiny event, after breakfast, one sentence, one question. And when one doesn't seize the moment, because if I had seized the moment at the moment, well, would it have been a yes, my God. I'd seize the moment, it would have been one big yes. But I didn't. Not quite that bad, but anyway, there. So, look, on that, I write poems, and in the English language, by the way, some of you may know, we have what is called iambic pentameter. It's a form of poetry in which the syllables are soft, hard, soft, hard. And iambic pentameter is the continuity in a single line of 10 syllables which go soft, hard, soft, hard, soft, hard. And the reason for it, when it was developed, I think originally in France, is so that the voice of the poet is in harmony with the heartbeat. Ti-dum, ti-dum, ti-dum. Ti is a soft, dumb, hard. Ti-dum, 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 ti-dum. The famous great one line of the beloved bard, Shakespeare. Full of wonderful poetry in the meter. To be or not to be. That is the question. It's still the question. It's always been the question with human beings, and it's the question that goes on here. So I wrote a poem. And one of the reasons I want to mention it, apart from nostalgia, but one of the reasons I want to mention it is that in poetry, Stephen was reading to us from T.S. Eliot and Rumi and other beloved poets who are around. Sometimes in life, as we know, there are, like the line of Shakespeare, that the poem of a poem of the poets, two or three may well stand out. And there's a certain kind of resonance that goes on. And people will write to the poets and say, I read this, your book of poem, and I really appreciated this poem. This poem really touched. And also, if I may say, happens to myself. And I noticed several times that certain poems touch a place. Not obviously for everybody. So, with this, I'm not going to mention this good lady's name, of course. My daughter knows her well. I find the poem. So the name of the poem is She Stands in Beauty. I recall aroma of lazy days. She's standing on the beach by the water, it's the sunset. I'm standing back, watching the goddess by the water. I recall aroma of lazy days, your naked toes to touch as the sea plays. At water's edge, a soul beauty I saw, welcome the red evening sun and more. Arch your long neck, dignity, beam of light, sublime creature, you stand in calm twilight. A sweetness beckons, your true state to reach, I felt my heart pulsating across the beach. I felt your happiness, blue ocean near, as you enjoyed the white-topped waves so dear. The spread of joy, a time to satisfy, eternal waters as breath meets the sky. I still recall you met with sun and sea, silent to witness, you set yourself free. I leaned back into rocks, remained still and sure, a hanging back, your cool embers held in store. And it's just a single moment, in one human being's life, of just witness and the small voice inside. And those moments, to repeat earlier, stand out in life and express something bigger than the event. And it's this capacity of consciousness, as we go through the regularities of our day-to-day life, to have the capacity in a whole variety of ways to be touched with life. And despite the sadnesses on this earth, and the conflicts and the anguish, and they are there, and they need to be addressed and acknowledged. The sadnesses of the earth and the pains of it will weigh us down. And when human beings are weighed down with the circumstances, and we lose our happiness, we can't respond. We can't even show the way of where we need to go, because we're actually sinking into that sadness. We find ourselves sinking into that pain. When human beings find themselves, we find ourselves in that, there is a limitation. We end up, in a way, stuck with our worries. So the freeing up of the being, which the discourse we're going through, is not in any way to avoid life, to step away from it, or to deny it, but to give us the capacity and the strength and the authority as well to respond to this world, knowing that we are still receptive to the happiness. That when we don't want to live life in denial of the happiness. We're not going to let the problems of this earth overshadow, that it overshadows and darkens and, pardon me, obscures the happiness. Another poem. In your meditations, in the issue of presence and being, we easily find ourselves with the thoughts and the flow of the thoughts, questions about who am I? Not necessarily in a very deep way, but sometimes the different identities that come occupy our attention. So if I am thinking about my past as an example, that past will have to have an identity. I might be thinking about my past as a son or a daughter, as a former lover, as a friend, as a relative, as a worker, as an employee, or whatever. So there is some stream of thought. My attention wanders into yesterday or yesterday year, and there's an archetype, to use the language of Carl Jung, a picture, an image of myself through the thinking in a particular role or identity. In the same way, of course, can apply to the future. There is the arising of the self, the identity, I, entity. And it moves towards the future, and the thinking may be, what will I be in the future? What will become of me? What should I give my attention to? What kind of roles, whatever they are, may appear for me in the future? Do I need to develop one, start a new one, or whatever? And rather similarly here, one can be, have the identity of the meditator, the student, the karma, yogi, and sometimes friends and other identities arise. Right. So, on this, I wrote. It's called Before the Thought. Who am I now before my mind moves to respond? Before the thought, before the view, what does my mind hurry to hide? Seeing what joy, mind transparent becomes empty, with no thingness to see at all, without foundation nor basis. We know little of who we are. Our concerns stay in measured roots. So strange the limits of thought. No essence, no basis, to see through it all, to know an oasis. So the thought arises, to summarize again, about identity yesterday, today, and tomorrow. And we may forget to ask ourselves, who am I before this identity arises? Who am I before the thought starts? And in the asking of that question, it's a kind of invitation to the inner life to be rather patient, rather still in a natural way, not a controlled way, and just to see, before the identity, could something in the being inform and reveal something which is not about identity? And therefore contribute, in a way, to a different kind of sense of ourselves. Sometimes in the depth of the being, in which identity has a small part, like a little wave in the great ocean of life, sometimes before the identity or before the thought arises, in the receptivity and the sensitivity, sometimes something rather precious and beautiful can move through the being. And that means that sometimes the happiness which emerges has no relationship to an impact of seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting or touching. It's not an event that from there to here, important and precious, but it's an event from here to consciousness. Just just over a year ago, family story here, my daughter, who has faithfully been mentioned probably, yes, in pretty well every retreat I have given since her birth. My friends say to me, Christopher, I've never met your daughter, but I know her whole life story. So last year, my daughter decided to get married and get married in a church. And immediately as a father, I first thought to her, my God, what have I done wrong? Mother never got married. I never got married. My mum was a single mum for years and she wasn't married. Her mother wasn't married and then got married years later. I mean, there's a family tradition of irresponsibility. So she said to me, I'm going to get married there and in a church. She had never been in a church in her entire life, etc. And I felt, of course, happy for her, but I also felt a little bit uncomfortable about it. And there were two or three reasons, one on the larger, one on the smaller. Marriage, I don't know how it is here. Well, I know how it is. But we'll keep to Christianity, you can do your comparisons. It's so patriarchal. I mean, it's unbelievably patriarchal. It just goes against everything. So, the groom, the guy she's marrying, is up there at the front of the church, inside the church. And then the bride turns up late, because you turn up late. And the father, this poor Waller, walks up with her, and then the priest gets up the front, and the priest says, do you give your daughter, Nishauna Titmus, to Dean Davis? Like a position. Like, you own her, and now you're going to hand her over to somebody else. So do you give your daughter away to Dean Davis? Well, suppose so. And my grandson, who's 14 years of age, and cool, he said to me, this is true, he said to me, Granddad, if you're giving Mum away, I want to give her away too. This is true. So he, walked on up the other side of her. So we both walked up together. He had a big smile on his face to give her away. And before we got married, my daughter wanted to wear one of these wedding dresses, you know. And I said, she said, I found a wedding dress. I said, yes. And I said, how much? Because who's paying for the wedding dress? She said, well, Dad, I went into a wedding shop. Oh, no, wedding shop. Hell, I'm going to be appealing for Donna for years. She said, I went into a wedding shop. She said, I found the perfect dress. I tried it on everything. But then she said that I went on to eBay there, because my daughter describes herself as queen of eBay. If you walk into her house, it's eBay. She has done 100, this is true, 170 transactions on eBay. She says, I'm queen of eBay. Everything you look into, eBay, eBay, eBay. So she said, I got a dress for £250. I said, £250 for 3 hours? She said, yes, Dad. But the day after, I'll sell it on eBay for 400. Oh, okay, I can't get it. And then she said to me, I want you, I don't know if you have this, they call it in England, morning suit. Basically, you look like a penguin. You know, you have a purple tie, striped trousers, and this jacket with a long tail on the bottom of it, there, buttoned up. This is true. This is honestly true. The last time I wore a suit was in 1967. And I said to her, sweetheart, I love you. I'm not telling you what dress to wear. And, you know, husband-to-be and I, we shouldn't be told what we should wear. So we compromised. And we wore the suit, but we found one where the tail, this long thing at the back, was much shorter. And then I kind of walked up the aisle like this. If you look like a penguin in the Buddhist world, one is in serious danger of being reborn a penguin. And the prospect of spending a whole life in the Arctic on some cold, windy island. That just doesn't appeal. So, anyway. That's the story with the family. So it's Anglo-Caribbean family. It's called Patchwork Family. Patchwork Family, it's one daughter, three fathers, four kids. Yeah. I said to him, months ago, because she already had three children, if you sneeze in front of my daughter, she'll be pregnant. And when she told me, I went up to him and said, you sneezed! Such is life. It's called patchwork families in Britain. Of course that wouldn't happen here. Alright. So there are the moments of life. Keep it coming back to the story of what I can't remember what I was talking about. Okay, that happiness. And in the happiness there is the event. In the event, it speaks of something large, of the of life, of the expansion of life. But the teachings also, while encouraging receptivity, while encouraging moment-to-moment practice, while giving full support to clarity and calm and working with the issues of life, still endorse the events of life. For example, this I thought was a lovely analogy of the Buddha. He said, one can look in the symbolic nature at our body as our home, as the place where we live. And the home has five windows, eyes, ears, nose, tongue and touch. And two beautiful birds fly through the window. No. Just today, one of you, the yogi, spoke about a bird entering into her mouth in a metaphorical sense. So, two birds fly through the window, and to the tenant, that's you and me, in the house, the two birds bring a message to the tenant of the house, the witness. The one who is mindful, to consciousness. And the message which is brought, the two birds have the name calmness and insight, samatha and vipassana. And they have a message. And then the ones who listen then said to the Buddha, well, what's the message that these two birds named calm and insight bring to mindfulness or to consciousness? What is the message they bring? And then the Buddha says, the message of liberation. So I say, sometimes in life, through the events of life, there, you and I can be touched with events, and there can be a symbolic significance. The small event can speak of something different, something bigger than there. So it's not only a practice of being close to ourselves and to life, but sometimes, what is life telling us? What is it revealing? Like on the last retreat, a person said, watching the ants pass by, and the ants are looking around for food, the ant finds some food, touches it, travels around the other and touches the other ants, so the other ants know where to find the food. They just follow the ant. There. And sometimes we see that and then we can ask ourselves, what is precious and beautiful in life, whatever, which touches me, and like the ant who finds the food for the colony, what can I bring to the colony? What's touched me that I naturally, like making a good meal at home, wish to share with others? And what I hear on retreats in your good voices, and elsewhere as well, is in our life, including our spiritual life and our Dharma life, sometimes we are genuinely very, very deeply touched with life. There's a real sensitivity and a sense of expansion with life. And all the challenges and the sadnesses that can go with it. And we want to give, because there's much more joy and happiness in life in the giving than in the taking. We want to give, but we can't find the form, so to speak, or the vehicle of how to do that. And we might be quite willing to make the sacrifices of one, in one's own personal life to do without. And that do without can be the money concerns and security, and for some it's been babies and children and some sacrificing of other opportunities, that sometimes there is the letting go, there is the receptivity, a genuine sensitive heart. This sensitive heart wishes to give, but we can't find what, in what way. I had something to offer, but I just can't find the way. And if we've looked at ourselves and we can't find the way, quite often there will be more feeling of sadness, because we have a sense we genuinely have something to offer there. And if we can't find the way and we are experiencing some sadness, can we, small but important steps, make contact with those women and men around who we feel have found their way, who we know and we sense who are offering something. And that contact and association, and there are some incredibly wonderful, the Buddha said the world, and I absolutely believe this, he said the world, in the world there are gods and goddesses and humans. The world of gods and goddesses and humans. And sometimes we can find our gods and goddesses. I don't mean ego tripping. Meaning someone who we connect with or group who gives some inspiration in a whole variety of fields which nourishes something. And the important aspect of this contact and communication is that in the giving we nourish others, and in the communication we get nourished. We shouldn't feel in any way I'm just doing it for others and I should forget myself. No, no, that nourishment can be from within, and others nourish us as we nourish them. There are times, it happened here, I think maybe 1 year ago, where sometimes we have to think creatively, we have to learn to think in fresh and new ways. And to give an example here, in a year ago, in one of the one-to-ones, and of course it's a common voice, there's nothing moving away from confidentiality here. Sometimes we may have real major difficulties with our parents, mother, father, or both. And those difficulties that can occur with the parents. And sometimes our parents, perhaps they don't like our lifestyle, they think we don't want to live in the real world, they want us to be just like them, which is completely neurotic, and they don't want us going off to India, because we might get in touch with yoga and meditation, and even worse, become vegetarian, etc. So, and all the other issues that can go on. And sometimes it's those reminders that mothers, demanding mothers and fathers can do. After this, I mean, this is enough to make one, you know, the one-liner, after all I have done for you, all right. So you don't want me to be an adult, you just want me to be a slave to what you want, etc. So in a communication last year, one of the good women on the retreat said to me it was impossible with her mother. demanding, phoning up, giving her a hard time, telling her she's wasting her life, etc., etc. So my response to that, having listened and talked with her, I said to her, I have a suggestion to make. So, yes, Christopher, please. I said, find a new mother. So, if the old one's not working, and sometimes they're not, or the old father, whatever, he's not working, then find a new one there. And what was rather sweet about this was, a few weeks later, she dropped me an email, and she said, Christopher, I've got a new mother. And she said, I work in an office in Tel Aviv, and the woman was probably in her mid, maybe early 30s, and she said, there's a woman in the office, and the woman's in her late 50s, and I just love her very much. I can talk with her, I can confide with her, I can listen to her. She's a good friend, and she's a real good support. She's what I want in a mother. So she wrote, she said, so I said to her, would you like to be my mother? And the good lady said, oh, I'd love to be. I just feel you're like my daughter. We're so close. And she said, the wonderful outcome of this is when her blood mother rings, she can just listen. That's going on. She said, she doesn't feel any stress, doesn't feel any pressure about it any longer. She just listens, she keeps polite, she keeps her cool, and just allows that to go on. She said she's been so much more relaxed. It was a very nice thank you letter, email. I use it sometimes. One more minute. I use it as a small example. Sometimes we got to, as we say in English, reflect outside the box. If there's a situation in our life, is there a way that I can have an original way of looking? And my goodness me, the tradition for 2,500 years has acknowledged the importance of the original mind. It's been 2,500 years of comment on the original mind, in which the old, the past, and the habits and the views that you and I might have are just not working. We look more deeper, and something of the original mind, something completely original that we never even thought of before, it's the original mind, can emerge through the being and we have a completely fresh way of looking at something. And sometimes it's almost a surprise to us. It's the unexpected. And Dharma teachings keep reminding of this lovely potential as human beings to be original, to find the fresh and the new. And if we allow that movement, I've hardly touched on the limitations, I'll keep it to another day. That if we allow that movement to take place, we won't be grasping on and identifying with the happiness. We will certainly not be demanding on ourselves that we should be happy all the time, like that appalling propaganda that's going out on our television screens night after night and on the walls of our cities day after today of beautiful, happy people there poisoning themselves with their McDonald's and their Coca-Colas and their Kellogg's cornflakes and all the other stuff. They're all smiling, smiling, smiling. It's a myth. It's a myth. And can we, therefore, rather than buy into the myths and the propaganda which is there, listen deeply, connect deeply, see what risks we can take, and perhaps a happiness and a joy will come out of that. And there are plenty of situations when it's not time to be happy. It's not time to experience joy. and it requires from us a real clarity, an accommodation of any sadnesses that we may have, and a focused, quiet determination to do what we can for one and all. Thank you.